It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Happy New Year.
Oh, my goodness. It's a week old already.
Well, yeah, it's the first time I've seen you in the new year.
It's been a few weeks, huh?
Yeah.
Almost. Gee. How you doing?
I'm doing very good.
Good.
We enjoyed the epic snows up in the mountains.
Yeah, we're up there too. Boy, 2 or 3 feet of...
waist-deep powder.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of shoveling, but when you don't live there, you just visit, and it's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
For all people...
Just have snowblower, we'll travel.
Yeah. But no, I don't have snowblower. I just use the old shovel thing. But
that gets tiring.
Yeah.
I like snowblower.
Well, major changes at the Jacobson household the last 2-3 weeks.
You guys have a puppy.
Well, yeah. I mean, I went through the sorrow of losing a dog first. A dear old somebody wrote me this week. I tried to find the email. I couldn't find it. It was a blog comment or something. They said, you guys ought to change the name of the show you guys do. Because every time we hear about Bodie, Sierra, and Sheba, you guys should call it The Dog Journey instead of The God Journey.
Well, dyslexic people already read it that way.
We do talk about our dogs a lot, but we lost our 14-year-old German Shepherd Husky mixed dog that's been one of the iconic things in this family. I mean, she's just deeply loved by our kids, deeply loved by us. I made this video for the kids for Christmas Day, which is kind of, she only died 5 days before Christmas.
Oh, I bet that was tearful.
We did. We put this video together. We've always joked about this dog. She's such an arrogant dog. I mean, she walks like she's...
Sierra?
Yes. She poses. She's the only dog I've known that poses for pictures. Our pictures of her are just awesome because she just pokes her head up and people would walk down. We walk her down the street. People go, that's the most beautiful dog we've ever seen. And she just turned her head like she knew what they were saying. And so I put this video together, and the opening song was You're So Vain. I bet you think the song is about you. And we were putting all the little puppy pictures in there of her just looking so prim. Our kids rolled. It was hilarious. And then we put the next song track came up for the next set of pictures, which was You Are So Beautiful to Me, which was a much slower song. And it was deeply emotive. And the kids are seeing pictures of them with this dog, and we're all missing her. First time they've been over, and the dog hasn't been here. And so it was, but you know what? For the first time, I hate when dogs die. We've had four now. It's our fourth dog. We've had to see through the end of life. And it rips your heart out every time. This time, making that video, watching it with the kids, we cried. We just embraced our grief. We miss this dog. She was a great dog in this family. We miss her. We got to cry about that. We told Sierra stories, and there's some hilarious ones of antics she did when she was here. We laughed about all that. And watched the video, cried together, and it was really wonderful. We've celebrated her going. I mean, even though we're deeply touched by it.
But life's like that, and I don't think our culture is real good at dealing with that. I don't think our religious culture is very good at dealing with that.
No, I notice most of the things people say to you at times of grief is to move you out of grief. Not to go ahead and embrace God. I mean, it's just a dog we lost. It's not a child. I know people I'm writing to are losing children at the moment. I mean, children are incredibly sick and may not make it. And so I know this is a dog. I'm really clear about that. But it's still, there's a grieving in our heart. And instead of this time just kind of blowing off past it or pretending it isn't there, I embraced it in a different way than I normally have. And it was sweet. It was sweet in the middle of the grief. And it was sweet just to say, you know, weep with those who weep as well as rejoice with those who rejoice. Both are there.
Yeah, and God's not absent from those moments.
No.
You know, there's no need to assign blame. There's no need to divine a message. It's just, this is a full aspect of life.
It is, and this dog had a life well lived. And our little granddaughters are over last night, and they're going, they're playing with the new puppy, because we got a new puppy here. And they were looking at me going, I sure miss Sierra. And I said, you know, I do too, honey. We really miss Sierra. She was a great dog. So we still have, I love the fact that we're talking about it and that we're not trying to pretend anything other than it's painful. She had a life well lived, but it's over. And I almost, the dog that died when we got Sierra ripped my heart out. I mean, I loved that. That dog was close. We went on long walks together, prayer walks together. She didn't do any praying. I'm not saying that, but.
You don't know that.
Very close to this dog. Yeah, well, there you go. And as we, and when she died, I mean, I just like, I don't ever want to get another dog. But then we got Sierra. And if Buffy doesn't die, we don't have Sierra. And if Sierra doesn't die, we don't end up with Abby. And even though dogs don't live as long as us, so there's more time with more dogs than you just get right. one. And but I'm learning to rejoice in that. The day after Sierra died, I saw these pups in the photo, in the paper. So Sarah and I went down and looked at one. They're only 4 weeks old at the time. We picked the little golden retriever pup out.
Sweet.
They kept her for 2 weeks while they got her all weaned and ready to go. And this was a dog from a sibling litter of 12. So... It was funny. I went to pick her up on Monday and walked in, and they're all in this pen, but they don't look like there's enough dogs in there. And there's a bag of puppy chow outside the pen, and it's moving.
So I said, three or four munchkin in there.
Well, I said, I think you got a dog in here. I pulled the dog out and holding it. It's still moving. There's five dogs in the puppy chow. That was hilarious. But we're getting used to Abby now. Abby's come to live in our home, and that's cool.
That's awesome.
So, and I've been living off this quote. I don't know if we talked about this in previous podcasts. I don't think we did. I think we saw it after we podcasted. But once saw the Voyage of the Dawn Treader Narnia movie.
Uh-huh.
And there's a great line, and it's not in the book. At least I've not found it in the book. It's not in the book, at least in the same scene where it is in the movie. But the very end of the movie when they're staying at Aslan's country, Caspian says something like, I've spent too long wanting what was taken from me and not what I was given.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, that
was a zinger.
I wrote it down. I'm going, you know, that's how we mostly live our lives. You know, we want what's been ripped off from us. And so we're going to fight and do all that stuff. And we don't recognize what we've been given and live inside the giving, not inside the taking. And so we've been living on that. And it's been
good.
That's
awesome. You know, we drove up to the mountains last week. And on the way up, we were supposed to be in a storm. And I was sort of dreading having to drive 5 hours in a constant storm, just going like, that's no fun.
That's why I make Sarah drive. It's much easier.
But we missed the storm completely. We were on the edge of it the whole time. And we saw, I mean, this was so stunning. We saw like 9 different full size, some even double rainbows that were huge. I mean, I've never seen rainbows like this. And there was just a sense of going like, wow, you know, I'm glad I'm not in the storm. I know what life is in a storm. And I'm tired of that.
I hear you.
Okay.
I so hear you.
You know, so I heard Caspian's word. I went, that's for me. I'm laying hold of that for me too.
Yeah.
But as we're driving up, I'm seeing this. And there was just a sense of, for me, it's like, you know, as opposed to, well, let's just invent a word. No, I felt like there was a sense of promise in those rainbows. And so Taylor texts me because she's in the other car because we got two huge dogs.
Oh, I was going to say, you shouldn't be reading text while you're driving.
No, and you shouldn't text either, but I did.
Not even should. That's illegal in the state of California.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm calling the governor. That. I'm calling the governor right now.
She texts me.
Darn, stop it.
Daddy, I think God is speaking to us. In the rainbows. And so I said, like, I agree. She says, what's he saying?
And he's speaking to us. I'm not a clue.
It was so cute because I'm just going like, I had that same sense. And I'm just going like, you know, for me, this speaks of a sense of promise and in the midst of an expected storm, not being in it. It was like God, I felt like he was saying, you know what? I have some wonderful things ahead.
Hmm.
If you can see through the junk of what's there. Because there was a real storm there. It's just, I wasn't in it.
Right.
And it was absolutely beautiful to behold. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have felt that way if I was 100 miles to the right.
I always enjoy storms from a distance. Yeah. I do.
But then we spent the next 5 days in an absolute, you know, epic snowfall. Lost power. And there was just, there were so many little moments in that following week that were just unexpected. You could have had a foul attitude and just hated it all. But a phrase is, the simplest pleasures are some of the greatest treasures. Waking up one morning and sitting outside with a cup of coffee and just for the first time after the storm, the sun shining on my face, that was a moment. And I just went,
12 degrees outside, right?
It was.
Yeah.
But I had a warm cup of coffee.
I don't drink coffee. I guess that's the key.
I mean, it's just, that was an incredibly fun moment. The other was all huddled around the fireplace trying to keep warm and just going like, there's something really sweet about that with candles. And I mean, there were moments where I'm just going like, you know, the simplest pleasures are some of the greatest treasures. And I just went, you know, you can miss these if you're trying to grab on to what it was that you expected or had hoped or wanted that isn't happening.
Hmm.
That's hard. I mean, dealing with disappointment. I mean, nurturing my kids through their teenage years and going, you know, a lot of it's dealing with disappointments.
Yeah.
And helping them realize, you know what? Do something about what you can change. But when you can't, don't become fatalistic and morose, but just realize, look for what God is doing and treasure that.
Yeah. Yeah. What I got from this Caspian quote, as I've meditated on this thing, because I've really enjoyed what it says, but it reminds me of Jesus' words in Matthew 6 about lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where moth and rust don't destroy and thieves can't break in and steal. And I've got to think, if it can be taken from you, it's not a true treasure anyway. Well, you're talking about the simplest pleasures of life. Somebody was talking about that the other day with, you know, how do the poor in impoverished countries, you know, I've heard more laughter walking through a township in South Africa of impoverishing that we don't get. More laughter, kids playing, stuff going on than I hear walking through a suburb in America.
Hmm.
Joy is really not based on what you have. That doesn't justify the township. I mean, there's all kinds of inequities in that need to be resolved. But what I'm saying is, true treasure, true joy isn't made up in the things that we often ascribe greater value to.
Yeah.
And if it can be stolen, I think that's what Jesus is saying in Matthew 6, if it can be stolen from you, it wasn't the true treasure. It's not the true treasure. And our hearts do, you know, we get tied up in things in this world. We obviously do. We all do. We get connected there. And then, you know, it gets lost.
Well, I just realized that we spent a week and the power went out for long periods of time, which for me was a blessing because it meant the people that were trying to get a hold of me couldn't, and I couldn't do anything about it.
Perfect.
It was wonderful. I mean, it's like, okay, great. I've got a legitimate excuse for not responding.
Yeah.
But in those moments, like one morning, we couldn't get out and we're just totally snowed in. And it just sort of like, okay, there's no point in going anywhere. The kids, as opposed to getting all cooped up and frustrated, they went out and they found this little hollow of a tree after the snowdrifts had piled so high. They found and formed their own little castle out of this hollow of a tree. And then they took these bricks and they made their little igloo walls. They made a beautiful snow castle out of this and spent the rest of the day. I think they were probably hypothermic by the time, by the
might
end.
Have been.
But it was so fun to watch them out of the midst of what's going on make something wonderful. Just the three of them, all different ages, and you're just going like, that was one of those little memories of going like, I will treasure that.
Yeah.
It was so neat to watch them invent, be creative, and just make a wonderful moment out of something that they could have had a bad attitude towards.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, as you're talking, I think about people from the upper Midwest, the East Coast, where they get snow and ice all the time. They're going, yeah, you people can talk like that. You spend six days in the snow. That's it.
I've done a tour of duty in Wisconsin. I know what that is like.
You live in Southern California.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
There's a reason I live here now and not there.
I was putting pictures up on Facebook. People were going, you can't be in Southern California. And I'm not. I'm at my folks' place up where they up in the Shaver Lake area of California, which is beautiful place and not far from where your in-laws and you guys hang out. So
yep.
That's always kind of fun. Update on the orphanage. This is
what's happening.
We've taken in almost $30,000 to date.
Awesome.
And we've matched that. So that's a total of $60,000.
Awesome.
I can't even believe it. I've been doing this for a couple
of
months.
Your target was 50, right?
Well, 50 to get 100.
Okay.
I mean, the goal is 100. We've been able to buy the land. They sent me pictures last week. I check them on my Lifestream blog, hopefully today sometime. But they sent me pictures. They're already digging the foundation for the buildings they're putting on it. They got pictures of that. And
wow.
They're just blessed out of their minds. And I'm blessed. I mean, we came back from our time out of town. We were gone about a week. And there's 10, 12 envelopes, people writing checks for the orphanage. Just put this to Kenya. Put this to Kenya. I wasn't even expecting them. And I'm not knowing they're coming at all. And I just very, very blessed to see how much generosity this has spawned from people's hearts. And the gal who was making dolls, I think we talked about it earlier on the podcast, she's made over 100 some odd dolls,
wow.
over $2,000 that's contributed just out of this 15-year-old gal who decided to make some dolls, handmade dolls, and sell them. Right. Pretty cool. There's just a lot of great stories of people who've been involved and how blessed they are over there. And, I mean, the need continues. We're hoping to get that total all the way up to where we need it. Another 20,000 should do it with the matching stuff. So pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm blessed by that. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Do you have your 2011 prophecies all lined up to give us?
You know, I have one really grateful thing. I found out scientific proof this week, then my friends may need to know this.
Oh, scientific proof for what?
I have scientific proof that I have a brain in my...
Oh, yes, you do.
I do.
How do we verify this?
I had an MRI and an MRA scan of my brain. I've had a couple of episodes that have caused some concern to my doctors, and so they're doing some brain research on my head. I was relieved to find there's actually something in there, which is
That's
cool.
That's good.
Don't have the results yet, so I don't know if they're finding what they're looking for. Could be a vessel, blood vessel problem. Could be a tumor issue. Could be nothing. So we're kind of going through that right now as a family. And
how are you handling that? I mean, that's scary stuff. That's not minor. That's had to send you in a number of different directions.
I don't know that it sent me anywhere yet. I mean, I guess when you hear the news that you have something major to deal with or they want to cut into my brain, I think I might be a little bit more concerned there. I'm not real concerned because I think I know what the cause might be, and I don't think it's what they think it is. And they're not sure it's that either. This is more we've got to eliminate these things to look at other things. So, at this point, I'm just...
I've seen Sarah's face.
I'm at rest with it. I think Sarah's got some concern. Sure she does. And my kids do. But we're just, it's the uncertainty of life, and we're taking the next step, and we're seeing what unfolds, and we'll deal with it when it comes. And, I'm not all that concerned yet, but I might end up there. I'm not yet. I've got a dear friend, the gal that wrote that poetry book that I came back from England with, and we shared with some people. I just had her on my heart the other day and wrote her parents to say, how is she doing? And they wrote back just a very discouraging note of just, she's the worst she's ever been. The doctors can't do anything more for her. They feel like her life is slipping away. And I just wrote back a prayer to them and just, loved up on them. And so my heart, I mean, those things are obviously big deals. We're not promised 80 years of life. We're not.
Right.
So you get what you get. I'm going to treasure the things I was given and not the things I've lost. I guess I'm going to try and live there. So I don't know that it's major. I don't know that it's anything. To be honest, I was on some weird medical kind of stuff. I'm off of that, and that seems to make a big difference. So it may have just been a reaction to something. So we're going to find out in the next few days, and we'll kind of keep going from there.
I think a lot of times people make a mistake, again, I think in over-divining or trying to discern, here's what all is being said. Sometimes life is just what it is, and you got to take it each step of the way. And there's a far easier way to not get shipwrecked doing that. You know, when God speaks, I mean, it was interesting. I had, a couple of things sent to me, and it's like, major national voices, they're 2011 prophecies. And you're just going like, gosh, putting them side by side, the contradictory.
The prophecies.
Just going like,
God speaking out of both sides of his mouth again, or what?
Well, I just sat there going like, I don't get some of that. It's like some things resonate with them. I'm going like, well, yeah, I think that's in my heart as well. But the others are just going like, I don't know. And I'm just going like, but two major voices, and they're completely contradictory. And I'm just going like, gosh, this seems so silly.
You've got to watch that stuff, I think, or listen to it like you watch football pregame shows.
Okay. I'm here as Jacobson.
I'm a football fan. We watch some football around here. And, Sunday morning, we were stuck up in a storm with power outage, so I didn't get to see the pregames. I finally saw a game later when the power came on. But I got home and watched one of the pregames I record because I just like the guy. They're funny. I like listening to them, watching what they're doing. But when you watch a show after the games, these guys talk so – these guys will whoop those guys because these guys are no good. And then you already know the scores. You know everything they're saying is absolutely wrong. But because it hasn't happened yet, they can say it with absolute certainty.
Right.
I have watched that for 40 years. I mean, I remember hearing there is no way Jesus won't come before 1970. And I was like, what? I'm not going to graduate high school until 71, and I definitely want to be married before Jesus comes again. I was seriously thinking about dropping out of high school. And then there was 88 reasons Jesus was coming in 88. They went to 89 reasons he's coming in 89. And you know, I have watched prophecies over the years, the kind, not real prophecies of people who have something on their heart that God's breathed to share and encourage you with, but people who prognosticate the future under the guise of God's leading. And I have seen less than 4% of those ever come to pass in any way that looks like it would ever be true.
It seems to be, because I sat there going, well, you know, because I was talking to this with one of my kids. He says, well, Dad, you know, we were just driving up, and you felt God was saying something to you, you know, for us. And I went, yeah. I said, but I didn't post it on a blog and not declaring it unto the nation. I said, you know.
Well, it's an encouragement in the moment, too. It's not, here's what's going to happen in June.
Yeah, but I even sat there and sort of re-looked at some of what was presented, and I'm kind of going like, you know, that may well be true in that person's locale and life and circumstance. And this other thing may well be true in that person's context. But you may well make a profound mistake in globalizing this.
And saying everybody.
And speaking it beyond. I mean, it's like if God asks you to do that, well, great, do it. But I wouldn't. I know so oftentimes people extrapolate out of their own enthusiasm or excitement of what has been given to them, I'm now going to apply this to everyone else. And I'm like, I think we make massive mistakes there.
I think we do, and I think we do, and we think we know the future. And I mean, how many times, we've talked about this before, you sit with people in a hospital room and somebody comes in with a prophecy, this sickness is not unto death. And you hear that, and the person dies a week later. And yet they think they've done a great thing to encourage. I mean, it's all well, very well-intentioned and all that good stuff. But when we think we know that, we actually prophesy our hopes, I think. We prophesy what we want. Prophelying?
Prophelying.
I mean, you understand why people do it. They want something so bad. Of course God would do it this way. And you just can't let things go the way they go. And yet life often does.
For hoping.
The friend Sarah and I were with over the holidays, he's a friend. I met him first in junior high school. I mean, way back in the day, we were friends. He was a believer. We went through high school together. And our senior year, he was going to be the homecoming chairman. And he asked me that summer, he said, would you be open to being my co-chair? I don't want to do all this alone. I'll do it with you. I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't really want to do this. Dad, okay, it'll look good on my resume or whatever. So I volunteered to be co-chair with him. And then August, he calls me. He says, do you mind handling the homecoming thing by yourself? And I said, what are you doing? Well, the coach came and asked me if we go out for football. He wanted to use him for receiver. He's senior. He's never been out for football before. Besides to go out for football his senior year and play wide receiver. And he said, I won't be able to do any of the homecoming stuff. Okay, so I get involved. So we have joked about this for almost 40 years. This is coming up on our 40-year reunion this year. That's how old I am.
Are you guys doing it together?
We'll be going through it, yeah. Our wives are saying that they're not going. That they've gone to 10, 20, 30. I don't think they're going to 40. But and we're up there yakking again. He goes, and that always comes up. We always make some joke about the fact that, you know, or he'll apologize. Yeah, I'm really sorry I betrayed you. I said, dude, little did I know you are giving me great practice for years to come. I've had many people in my life tell you one thing and do a different thing. It's all playful between you and I. It's just a lot of fun. I haven't heard over it. In fact, I had a great time cheering up homecoming. But at the end of the day, we just had this great joke about, yeah, I'm used to it, man, because now I've gotten lots of those things in my back pocket of people who said they would do something, and they decide they can't do that, and they don't want to do it, and they don't care what kind of cost you pay now that they don't want to fulfill what they want to say. So I just told them it's probably good practice from God to get me used to what's going to unfold in days to come, unfortunately. I thought this was a pretty good email. This came from Sarah, not my Sarah, but a different Sarah, Sarah with an H. So last year about this time, we began listening to a teaching called Lukewarm and Loving It.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you whose it was, but they say we were both sincerely moved and saw that we thought was incredible fruit from the moment of rededication and further abandon our lives to him. My husband, for the first time, had a hunger for reading the scriptures, desire to lead the family of the Lord more than ever before. We even believe that may have been when the Holy Spirit touched him so he could understand the scriptures fully. One of the biggest results of the teaching we were hearing was a sense of growing motivation to make use of the lives we have. We felt incredibly heavy. What have we been doing with our lives? We've been living for ourselves and just adding Jesus on the side. No more. This led to many things. We started a neighborhood group with other believers. Sadly, those we invited to join us were not as enthused. They came, but it soon felt more intimate fellowship and desire to share real life led us to explore Simple House Church. I read an excerpt from the Jake book, dove into the transition teaching. What I'm struggling with now is, after a year has gone by, I recently again listened again to Lukewarm and Loving It. She said, I was horrified. I truly cannot believe how quick I was to pass this shame-based, fearful message onto my closest family and friends. Ooh. In bold caps. We felt it was so impacting to us that I wanted to share it. It reminded, and she talks about there's some of the things in her family have really been destroyed by them trying to push this message of lukewarm and loving it. But what I loved about her letter, a year later, you go back and listen to something you thought was so profound, and you find out, ooh, yuck, how shame-based and easily manipulated I was by the religious thinking of our day. She reminds it. She said, it was so impacting for us that I want to share it. It reminds me of one of your transition talks where you said, we do things to people we sincerely love that are not loving, because we're convinced ourselves that it's what they need. And I love the journey of going, man, this is a great thing. This has got to be true. And then a year later going, oh, my goodness, look at the lives we destroyed. But I wrote back and said, look at the growth you've had. That's what you got to look at. You got to look and say, wow, that you can see more clearly now into that space than you could see before.
Yeah, that's marvelous.
And now you can go back to people, yeah, you've hurt. What I find is an apology, a sincere apology, goes a long way to fix a lot of damage. It does. Mm. And so we'll see what her journey looks like. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, I think the big challenge in all of that is there is a lust for certainty, and I want some kind of like promise guarantee of the good outcome I hope for. And I think the tools of religion that say, well, okay, if you'll do this, this will be. It's almost like that implied guarantee result. I'm just going like, you know, if I look back over my life and I don't have, you know, but 40 some years of.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. I got some salt and pepper. Okay.
Sooner than you think.
But you just look at so many of those things. No, they didn't turn out like I supposed or thought or would even have put God quotes on. It's not to say that God isn't speaking, but I think the way we extrapolate that down to that meaneth this. He's going like,
meaneth? Why? Yes. You went to King Jimmy on that.
Well, yeah, because that's authoritative.
Wow. You know, not to me, but okay.
I think that's where it's like, you know, I've learned to walk a little more humbly and going like, I don't know. And that's not a wrong statement. It's just, I don't know. This is what I think I've heard. We'll see. And that's not a lack of engagement. I mean, there's things that I'm very focused in terms of taking time to pray, to go like, I'm going to engage with this. I'm going to lay hold of this. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to hold it in a way that says, I'm not God. And I'm not omniscient in it. And just because I think I've perceived that does not mean that I was right. I think if we did that a whole lot more, we'd wound a whole lot less.
Yeah, it is so amazing to me that the increasingly certain we are of our view of things, whether it's prophetically or scripture interpretations or whatever, the more certain we are that we're right, the more dangerous we are in the world. And at the same time, I don't think truth is that unknowable. I think,
no.
But I think people who really know truth handle it far more lightly than people who don't. People who aren't sure of truth got to ram it down. That lead dog on someone else's journey we talked about last week. They've got to be that way because it's just they're really driven by something. It's not truth they're driven by. It's driven by some innate need in themselves to be right and to force others into what they think is best for them. And that's even Paul could say, who's writing scripture for Pete's sakes. We're seeing through
for
a
Peter's
glass.
Sake.
We're seeing through for Peter's sake. Well, it's Peter, not for Peter's sake. Peter thought it was confusing too. But it's writing scripture saying we're looking through a glass darkly. The best we see is through a darkened glass. And so I like that. I think God's put things on my heart for this year. I think there are things coming up in my life that I think are in play from God. But I'm like you. I see bits and pieces of that. I wouldn't begin today to tell you with any degree of certainty how that will play out because I don't know. I do know that I'll follow what God puts on my heart and watch life unfold.
I mean, I could plan out according to what I believe I've seen, perceived, heard, been impacted by. And frankly, I do that. But at the same time, I hold that very loosely with the sense of going, that's in play. That's not guaranteed, predetermined. It may even be what God wants, but I'm not assured that all the minutia that goes into those decisions and all the other wills that can impact that will necessarily be in agreement or alignment with that. Yeah. And I'm okay with that. I don't know why I think in my younger years, living with that in flux would have befuddled me. I would have like, oh, I don't like that. I want certain. I'm just like, now it's like, I'm a lot more comfortable with that because it's like, no, I have a sense of what I'm hoping for. I have faith in things that I know that God has said that I know He wants. But I still know that those outcomes may not happen, even though they've been spoken as what He wants. Hmm. And the reason I don't get shipwrecked between there and whatever that outcome is my hope is in Him, not in that. And that's a massive difference. Because, I mean, I was driving up and looking at those rainbows. I sat there going like, you know what, Lord? It felt like I've been here before. I've felt this before. I've gone through different things that brought me to the same sense of that moment. And I don't want to just have prophetic leftovers. Yeah. I don't want to reheat this back in the prayer microwave. It's like, God, are you saying this? And what I realize is, you know what? The same God that encouraged me back in that storm is the same God with me now and my little girl saying, hang on, I'm with you and things will be all right. And there was just a sense of peace and assurance of going, I don't know the full journey, but I know who I'm journeying with. And that's very comforting.
Yeah, and I think that there's the sense of certainty is that He is with us. And the thing that mitigates against our using whatever truth or agenda or feeling of right justice that we have in our hearts is if you simply love the people around you, love never forces its will on another person. And I think that's the amazing dichotomy, I guess, of Scripture. You've got the God of the ages who's got the best stuff about everything. He's not forcing His stuff on anyone. He invites us into that life, and He doesn't compel us. And I think those are the two things that mitigate against the danger of uncertainty in dealing with people in our lives. One is that we hold truth lightly, and two is that we love the people around us, and love never forces. Love never projects its way over someone else and holds them in that kind of account. And yet unlove does. Unlove says, I've got to be right no matter how it hurts you, no matter how it crushes you. I get the emails, tons of them. I got them over this last season of people who, part of a group of people, feel like they've got to step out of that for a time, and then all of a sudden they become the Antichrist. They're rejected from every kind of engagement in person and whatever. And the people doing it to them, they feel like that's what we have to do to help you see the error of your ways and get you back in the fold. We've got to treat you like you're a piece of dirt until you want to come back. And when I used to do that back in the day, you go, wow, how counterproductive is that? We're going to get you to love us by treating you unlovingly. Even their own end game is kind of backwards. But when conformity becomes the only ambition, when you, Brad, must conform to what I want or I'll make you pay the price. Now, I have just, even for godly reasons, chosen an ungodly approach. Because not even God does that stuff.
No.
God, love never forces its way. It invites, it engages, and does not compel. Boy, we live in that age where, boy, if you think you're right, you can drag anybody you want down any road you want. If you have the authority or the, I don't know, pride or arrogance or whatever, to go ahead and I can make you do what I want you to do. And there's people who do it. There's people who try it with me all the time.
Not living there anymore, folks.
Yeah.
This is from the Betrayal podcast we did a while back. The reason any of us are selfish is that we think it's up to us to make sure we're taken care of. This is from Jana. When we have had fallible parents, friends, and lovers shaping the foundations of who we believe ourselves to be and how valuable we are, one of the greatest lies we believe and live by is, it's all up to me. The only remedy to this miserable lie is to know how deeply we are loved by God. The deeper I swim into the depths of Him and His love for me, the less selfish I become, the less expectations I have of others, and the less their expectations of me matter. I was also remembering a time I looked around most of the people in my life and felt like my love bank was empty. Like when you talked about the fact we were taught that love has to do with what others do for us. I wanted to move away and start a new life with new friends who would reciprocate all of the selfless contributions I was making to their lives. Gag. As I was lonely enough, that gag was hers, by the way. As I was then lonely enough that I was forced deeper into Him, my heart started to change, which is the most extraordinary thing. I found that people He had put in my life actually offered opportunity for real relationship that would not be self-serving or codependent, but rather would push us further and further into His arms. Now I look at the depth of the relationships I'm surrounded by and I'm amazed. Have I been betrayed? Yes, I have. Have I been loved? Even more so. That's a great
thing. That's good.
Isn't that good?
That's good.
That's back to Caspian's look into what you've been given and not what you've lost kind of mentality. Because, yeah, we've all, I think everybody's been through moments of betrayal and whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, living on planet Earth, I'm going to say you probably have that as a refrigerator guarantee.
Yep.
You know, we will be touched and tested by those things, and they can shipwreck you. They really can. I mean, I think it was Gene Edwards that wrote this. If you could emerge through your 30s and into your 40s without being bitter, you've accomplished a mighty thing.
Wow.
And I said, and I was like, I think that's profound. And I think it's true.
I do.
And it's like, Lord, give me a tender heart that doesn't have to harden itself so as to protect me. People will do things that are wrong and unkind and unloving, and you can't do anything to stop it. But what you do with it, I think, is what makes the biggest difference in terms of the true outcome that's going to be there. And I think that's where it's like, you know, no weapon forged against you can prosper. Doesn't say it can't hit you or hurt you. But if I don't harden myself in it, it's not going to accomplish what the enemy wants.
Yeah, and you can, if you want, be so hurt by relationships that you put up all these defenses. I think that's exactly Jana's
point. And then have no more of them.
Jana's point. And then not realize that you're loved too.
Yeah.
I think the challenge of loving like Jesus loved in the world is that you're going to love people who don't reciprocate that same love back to you. If that's the standard, I want you to love me the way I'm loving you, forget it. Even your marriage isn't going to work if that's your standard of life. But if the standard is, I'm going to love freely. And then when people are kind of yucky, give them space to be yucky. Just give them space. And when people are genuinely loving toward you, enjoy that love. And you find out there's people, yeah, there's cruddy people in the world. There's also wonderful, loving, warm, kind, gracious people in the world. And those are the ones that you get to love and embrace and live in the fullness of that relationship. And yeah, the cost of living in that is you're going to invite some people into your life that turn hurtful. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? You're going to – that's where I think the boundary –
what are you going to do?
Yeah. You can throw up the drawbridge and say
– it's not fair.
I'm just going to stay in my little group of people. I had someone write me this week a very sad letter, but he was concerned about his own life, and he's got a wife who's leaving him, and he, you know, she's kind of was a spiritual woman of some kind, I guess, has kind of lost her heart for God and lost her heart for the Bible, lost her heart for the marriage, and he's writing to me saying, she has to stay, right? She has to become, you believe in the marriage covenant, right? Once you make a commitment, and I'm going, dude, if the only reason your wife can think to come back to you is she has to, I think that's the wrong approach. If you want her back, you've got to go win her with love. It's not going to bash her with the Bible and say, you made a commitment, doggone it. And then in the course of the email, he let slip that she had been married 5 previous times. I'm going, so there's a track record here of something. I don't know what it is, but
how painful.
It's horribly painful. But the answer to painful relationships is not, I'm going to pull up the drawbridge and I'm just going to, just me and God, we'll make it ourselves. There are so many warm, wonderful, tender, gracious relationships. And this time of year, I mean, we send some emails, we get cards from people at Christmas time, whatever. And you're renewed with these people, people locally and people around the world whose homes I've stayed in, people I know well and love, people who travel around the world just to sit and be with you in a hard time. There is so much to be gained from great relationships that, yeah, occasionally you're going to get dinged, or maybe you get dinged a lot, because sometimes people, and I wrote to one person the other day to say, hurting, we've said this before, hurting people do stupid things. So you're getting really winged on by somebody. What you know is they're hurting. They're hurting. They wouldn't be doing what they're doing, but they are. And yes, it's destructive. And yes, you can take some distance from it. But you can also just go on and keep loving. I love that. Not being bitter at 40 is probably one of the world's best achievements. That'd probably be true.
I think that the challenge is to recognize, if I'm trying to get from people what truly I can only get from God, I am going to live a pretty disappointed, dissatisfied life. Because I don't think people can give me what it is that I fully need. And if I'll learn to go to the fountain of life itself, to him, and that's where I can drink and draw what I need, then if I get anything kind from anybody else, that's like dessert, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I get that.
There's a sense of being able to go, Lord, I want to be able to love the people around me like that, where it is open-handed. It isn't demanded.
And I don't need anything from you. I don't need it. If I get it, great, but I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say that to anybody. Well, no, I mean, the reason I...
No, I wouldn't say that to other people. No, I get that.
Okay. Because
I don't care how you treat me, I'm going to love you.
No. Yeah,
that's kind of like, that's like, stiff arm someone right in the face. I sort of feel like...
I get that.
To be able to inwardly go, you know what, Lord, you are all I need, and to be secure and okay in that, I think that's a marvelous thing. I think that's a place of security and safety that will help me and empower me to deal with all the other situations that may not be what I was hoping for.
Yeah, and if you're free to live that way, I think what it does is it allows the other person to define the nature of the relationship. In other words, I don't need to define it. I don't need to make you my friend. I don't need to draw you into something. I'm just going to love you and care about you, and as much of this friendship as you want, you can have. And as much of it as you want to tramp on and spit on, then you're going to get less of it. You just are, because I'm going to let you set the tone for this, rather than my need to, find a friend and find something. I got all my needs projected on someone else, which we talked about before, not very healthy. Then we'll take a step back and say, well, why don't you set the tone for this? So when you're ready to go deeper, and I don't say that to either, I just watch the relationship. When it unfolds organically, if they want more, we'll get more. If they don't want more, if they just want to use the relationship for some reason, then they're going to get less. But they're going to set that.
There's nothing worse than, I'll be careful here. Around the holidays, one of the things I noticed, both, because we celebrated a number of different places.
Yeah.
You have folks that are going like, oh, I just want this to be such a meaningful time. And it is so sincere. But you can't control that.
Oh, gosh.
No. You can't make that happen. You can't force that. And should you dare try, you will have guaranteed the opposite result. Because I sat there going like, we were at this one moment where it's like, it was one of those forced, meaningful moments.
Not so meaningful.
You're just looking around it. There were some nice things said. There was some perfunctories that went through that you're just going like, I bet if the instigator had had the patience to just wait and to invite that in, those things are there. They would have come out. They might have been shared. They could have been encouraged. But when they're demanded, they suck. I mean, it just doesn't. I just have to go like, oh, what a spoiled moment for well intentions. But they just.
That sums up most of what we talked about in this podcast with religion. It's good intentions, but driven by some kind of other internal need. It pollutes it. It just makes it yucky. Instead of letting us embrace the gifts that God gives, we're so busy. Well, the Caspian quote about taking, you know, trying to get what's been taken from me. The other thing is you being the taker. And I'm trying to get the most out of this moment. I'm trying to make you be what you need to. It's the same thing. Live inside what God gives. And I think that's where life becomes full and free, even in the midst of tough times, instead of trying to make life the way I think it ought to be, which often, almost always, doesn't work.
Not so good.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.